If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
I'm John Williams, so you can tell I've enjoyed Dave Barry's latest book. You would too, just based on the first paragraph in the introduction. He writes, "So I'm in a rock band with Stephen King. I'm not name-dropping here, I have a point. It's an all-author band called the Rock Bottom Remainders. If I had to identify our biggest weakness as a band, I would say it's performing music. We suck at that. What we're good at is endurance. We've endured as a band for more than 30 years. Something you cannot say about, for example, the Beatles." So you're better than the Beatles. Is that where we're going to start, Dave?
Well, in terms of longevity, yes. And a number of still surviving members, yes.
You got that going for you. Yeah.
Playing, you know, things like technical things like playing, I don't want to get too technical here with the audience, but chords. there are these things in the songs, right, called chords, and you're supposed to play them in a certain order. Right. And this is the area where we're a little weaker than maybe the Beatles.
So I also appreciated the fact that early on in the book, and it maybe is a reason to write the book, you say people will often say to somebody like you, where do you get your ideas? And your one-word answer is what?
Costco.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, writers are always being asked that, so we generally joke about it. Nobody has any idea. I think the main place most writers get their ideas is if they don't have an idea, then they'll have to get a real job. So then you get an idea.
I must say, though,
kind of like working in radio, John, wouldn't you say?
Well, I will say that some of the best material comes from the most rudimentary or common everyday experiences. You know, you had some fame just writing about the birth of your child and those classes that you took with your then wife, or getting a colonoscopy, for crying out loud. It's just the common experiences that you tap into, right?
Yeah, everybody thinks, I think, that humor comes from, like, having a really weird sense of, you know, the world or whatever, and it really doesn't. People respond the most to columns that I've written that are just everyday things, because everybody can say, yeah, I know that. That's true. I've been there. And people like that a lot.
I think that works on radio, and radio works well, too. And yet, I also believe, that I don't think this is true about broadcasting, but it's true about humor. Comment on this, that it comes from a place of pain. And right away in your book, then, you talk about your childhood and some of the very painful experiences that you endured. And you, at the end, say your parents were great, you love them, and they taught you how to be a good person along with your siblings. But you talk about some of the difficult things you endured as a kid and as a family. Does your humor come from that place, too?
Well, yes and no. I mean, definitely, I had two wonderful parents. I want to stress that, and they both had issues. They both had problems. My mom struggled with depression all her life. My dad became an alcoholic. Now, he recovered and became very active in AA, and he was a wonderful man. And my mom ultimately committed suicide, which was after my dad died. It was rough for her. And I talk about both those things a lot in the book. But I also talk about that, you know, this sounds like, okay, well, his dad was an alcoholic and his mom committed suicide, his childhood must have been horrible. I had a wonderful childhood. Yeah. I mean, they did not inflict any of that on me. And my sense of humor really came from both of them, but especially my mom, who was she was very, very funny in a very, very dark way, but edgy, edgy lady. And she was like a housewife in the 50s raising four kids. But she was different, you know, and she would make fun of anything. Like, we had this pond. We lived in the woods. We had this pond behind our house. And my sister and I, when we were little, like 5, 6 years old, we'd go play in this pond, around the pond, which you'd never let anybody do now. But in the 50s, you know, kids were allowed to do stuff like that. But I'll never forget, we'd be going out to the pond, and we'd say to my mom, you know, we're going to the pond. And, like, that's a moment where most moms would have said, you kids, be careful. Just stay away from the, you know, whatever. Some mom-like thing. My mom would go in this June Cleaver voice, well, don't drown, kids. And it's super cheerful. And it was her way of taking something she was really genuinely scared of, worried about, and turning it into humor. And we would go, like, we won't, Mom. We got the joke. So that, to answer your question, is there was pain and certainly my mom's life. But in the end, it became sort of the way I thought about the world, and it ultimately gave me this whole wonderful career writing humor.
I love the story about her returning the skill saw.
Yeah, my mom, we had a neighbor when I was growing up. My dad basically built our house. He was a Presbyterian minister and not skilled at house building, but he did it because he didn't have any money. And he borrowed a skill saw from our next door neighbor, a guy named Tom Shroth. And Tom then got a job in Washington, D.C. As an editor of a magazine called Congressional Quarterly. And he and my parents had, my dad still had the skill saw. And so over the years, my parents and Tom developed this kind of friendly banter. They would write mail back and forth. And Tom, in more, you know, increasingly strident tones, would say, "Where's my skill saw? You still have my, I want my skill saw back." And finally, one day, my mom, without telling anybody she was going to do this, puts my brother Sam, who's then 5 years old, in the car and get in the skill saw and drives from New York to Washington, D.C., just so she could pound on the door and have Tom open the door and stand there and go, "Here's your GD skill saw."
250 miles. She throws your brother in the car and says, "This will be a good gag because this this running joke, the best punchline would be just show up at the door, go, here it is, get back in the car, drive 4 or 5 more hours back home." Boom. Mic drop.
Yeah. So when I was researching this book, I got in touch with Tom. Tom has passed away long ago, but his wife's the widow is still alive and his kids. And I said, I just want to confirm that this happened in this year or whatever.
Yeah, really.
And they said, "That is still a legend in our family." Your mom showed up on my dad's door with a skill saw.
Well, one other thing, though, about your mom and dad, and then I want to move on to many more things here, but you also said that when your dad was dying, your mom called you and said, "Dad's dying and you need to get down here." And you said, "So I got in my last words because I have to go back home. And my mother and I agreed that I probably won't see him again. I sit next to him on the bed, hoping that he can't see I'm crying. 'I love you, Dad,' I say. And he says, 'I love you too. I'd like some oatmeal.' So I go back out to the living room where my mother and my wife and my son are sitting on the sofa in a line waiting for the outcome. And I say, 'He wants some oatmeal.' I'm laughing and I'm crying about this. My mother thinks maybe I should go back in and try to have a more meaningful last talk, but I don't. Driving home, I'm glad I didn't. I think he and I have been talking ever since I learned how. A million words, all of them final now. And I don't think, I don't need to make him give me any more, like souvenirs. I think let me not define his death on my terms. Let him have his oatmeal. I can hardly see the road." And my mom is in the hospital, and my dad could die any day. And they also, the family chat is, could live 10 more years. And I'm reading that, and I was with my mom last night in the hospital, and I have two stories that I want to tell her. I have two souvenirs I want to give her, but I also sort of want to live in the moment. And Dave, I also felt that if I did tell her these stories, it would feel like, "Oh, Mom, I have to get these in before you die, and it may be tomorrow, but it might be years from now." I read that at the same time that I was living that with my mom. I just wanted you to know how resonant that was for me, how meaningful it was.
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you for reading that. You're making me cry. I'm in a car on a way to the airport in San Francisco. I'm on a book tour, and you're making me cry thinking about my dad. But yeah, you're right. There are a couple of essays that are sort of about that, about like, gosh, we're making this book sound really funny, aren't we?
I know. We'll get to the funny stuff anyway, later. Don't turn off the radio.
but like there's this tendency you have to want to make the deaths of somebody else about you. And it's not. It's their death and their experience. They're the ones going through it. And you can't really know what they're going through. So you just sort of have to hang back and let it be their thing.
Dave Barry, you are going to be interviewed by my good friend Mark Baser. He and I had dinner two nights ago, and you are going to have a great conversation with him on stage. Anything in particular you wanted him to ask you when you're in Chicago tomorrow?
Yeah, you should ask me where I get my ideas.
No, we've already done that one. Costco.
Oh yeah, we did. No, I'm he's a pro. I'm sure he's going to do a great job on I'm happy to talk about pretty much anything. So
evidently, yeah. What would you say are some of those things that exploded in ways that you would not have anticipated or surprised you?
When you write a column, a humor column, you never know what's going to happen. Like, I wrote a column once making fun of the state of North Dakota, which I will never do again, and no one ever should, because they got revenge on me. First of all, I got an angry letter from everybody in the state, which was nearly 115 letters. And second of all, they invited me up to Grand Forks, North Dakota in January and dedicated a sewage lifting station in my honor. And
nice.
It's still there.
Nice.
If you go to Grand Forks for any reason, there is a there's a brick building, and on it in foot-high letters, it says Dave Barry Lift Station number 16. So I'm pretty proud of that. That I didn't expect. I wrote a column once that ended up because of this column on the David Letterman show, setting fire to a pair of men's underpants with a Barbie doll. Now, I didn't set out to do that, but that's where that column took me. So you just don't know. You never know. I wrote a column once. Some guys had suggested to me that everybody should talk like a pirate on September 19th every year. And I just throw away column. I didn't even think about it. And that was almost 20 years ago. People are still talking like
pirates. Are you the reason we do that? That's you?
Yeah, well, I didn't come up. It wasn't my idea, but I popularized it by writing a column about it. And I'm pretty sure that 100 years from now, no one will have any idea who I was ever. There'll be no memory, but people will still be talking like pirates on September 19th. So that's probably my legacy, my enduring. Yeah. And that's the thing. The only thing anybody knows to say like a pirate is "arr." After that, they pretty run out of vocabulary. So that's probably why we don't have any pirates around anymore.
One last thing. Just say something about civility in an era where it seems to be in short supply. You exude that, but it's also humor. It can be biting. People in Miami and New York City are probably still mad at the things you wrote about them. But just what's your MO about being funny and sharp, but not stupid or critical?
Yeah, just lighten up, folks. Jokes are jokes. And, you know, life is too short to be getting upset about somebody make fun of your city or whatever. Just laugh. Go ahead with it. We've lost sort of that generosity of spirit where we all kind of laugh together with the way we used to do when Johnny Carson was the guy who told the jokes. But lighten up, people. It's, you know, the life is short. Enjoy it while you can.
I was looking for something a little more profound. Life is short. Lighten up, people. If you maybe work on that for your interview with Mark tomorrow, have something.
Well, tell me what I should say, John. I'll say it.
Use some bigger words, flowery stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Isn't that interesting?
Lighten up, people, when you go to the delicatessen or the refrigerator.
Dave, I really enjoyed your book. I know you're in a car and we're both out of time, but thanks for sharing that with us. And folks, you're going to have a good time when you're in town tomorrow.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you having me.
It's Dave Barry. His latest is Class Clown.